You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental. From my apartment in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn, I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Charlie Davies. It is Thursday, September 17th, 2020. I'm just saying that to remind myself, as always, trying to keep track of where we are in this world at this time. Big show today, Steve Zakuani. Going to join us to talk about soccer. He has been given the awful, awful assignment, guys, the one that you don't want, of writing a thought every single week about all 26 teams in this league. And I will pour one out for him, because in about a month, he's going to be texting me being like, I can't do this anymore, man. How do I not repeat myself? These teams are doing the same thing over and over and over again. What do I do?
Or it turns out Steve Zakuani is just better at what he does than you, and he doesn't do that because he can't.
Oh. You know what?
Curveball, if you didn't think of that.
You say that, I dare you. Text Bobby Warshaw right now and say that to Bobby Warshaw, because Bobby said the exact same thing. I inherited that assignment from him, and I'm glad that Steve now has it. But we'll get his thoughts on a lot of things going around in the league. We got some good mail. We'll bring him in on, like, what makes a good coach during their playing days? How do you know somebody's going to be a good coach? We will talk about Albert Elise and that transfer. We'll talk about whatever it is that's going on with Jordan Morris and soccer Twitter. I don't know what it is, but we'll talk about that. But first, I do want to put this out there. Have you guys registered to vote? You guys good on that front? Everybody good?
Charlie?
Good to go? Thumbs up right here. MLS today announced that in conjunction with the Black Players for Change and the MLS Players Association, they've launched MLS Unites to Vote. So go check that out. You can do so. Get some resources at MLSsoccer.com/MLSunitesToVote. Basically, it is a push in advance of National Black Voter Day and National Voter Registration Day to get our community, the soccer community, educated on the voting process, voter drives, registration, how you get it done, what your timeline is, encourage people to volunteer on Election Day, which is going to be huge this year, and showcase basically what's happening with MLS players and the clubs. I think everybody at the league office is being pushed on this. I hope everybody was doing that already at the clubs. We're doing it to you too, our listeners. We hope you're doing it. It's nonpartisan. So I'm not going to speak to you about that side of it. I'm just going to say, go exercise your right to vote. Do it. Let's get it going. And I'll start with this, Charlie. I was watching yesterday on Twitch the MLS FIFA rankings reveal show. And I was just thinking, man, you know, Dave, you kind of roasted me here. What if there was like a FIFA card for us and somebody came in and was like, Wiebe transitions, he's a 43. I would take it so personally. And I would have like beef in my heart, and I would hear about it from you guys. What is an MLS locker room like on FIFA rankings day? What's going around in there? Do people actually care? Do they look, or do they just say they don't look?
There's people who look, because there's people who play FIFA religiously. So they want to know what their rating is, and it means a lot to them. Then there's guys who look, but they don't really care. And then there's guys who just don't even pay attention to it. But at the end of the day, everyone knows who plays FIFA, who doesn't. And if that person has a poor rating, everyone can kind of give it to that player, whether it's like, oh, you didn't complete that pass in training, or you didn't finish that shot because your rating is a 53. You know, you throw that out there, that stings.
Which were you, Charlie?
Well, I had both sides. So I was, you know, the high flying, fast, you know, I had the 95 speed or whatever it was, you know, and before I had my car accident. So I was like that guy that was like, yeah, you know, you won't put me in the game because I'm going to get behind. Then I had the car accident, and I noticed my speed went from like in the 90s to like low 80s. High. And I said, oh yeah, that doesn't feel good. But the worst is when you just like start to play and you're starting, you're in a real rhythm and a groove, like playing real games. But like your friends or teammates are playing with FIFA and you're on the bench and you're like,
hey guys, you want to, hey, come on, give Charlie a run.
I'm really playing. I'm scoring goals. What do you mean I'm on the bench? Yeah, your rating's not like strong enough. What? So just imagine that magnified by 1,000 in these locker rooms.
Dude,
and then like, if you're the guy too, who's just like kind of sitting on the corner and you're seeing like guys playing with your team, but you're not on the field, you're like,
or it's like halftime, and they're like,
oh, yo, so you're watching your current teammates play with your current team, and they're not using.
Like, sorry, man, got to give you.
Yeah, the or they're really just, yeah, they're subbing you off out of the 11, like to start the game, and you're like, you know, that's it's not a good feeling. So I've been on both sides. But
is Hammarby in the game? What was the first time you played with yourself?
Yes, Hammarby is in the game.
So when you were in Sweden, you played FIFA with Charlie Davis.
Yes.
That's tight.
Was it exclusive? Or like if you were in manager mode, were you always transferring in Charlie Davies? Inevitably, he has to be your starting striker. Or were you realistic with yourself and you were like, hey, I'm managing, you know, a pretty big club right now. Maybe Charlie's got to make a jump or two before he gets to me.
Charlie's always playing. Look, no matter what team I was playing with, Charlie Davies was playing on the field and he was going to score. I was going to get him up to be the top rated striker. But yeah, I mean, I'll never forget that first time you get to play with yourself in a video game. It's always kind of something that you dream of, you know, when you're trying to become a professional.
You don't in those scenarios dream of, I don't know, I'm just going to throw out a scenario, like maybe punching somebody in the knee in a critical moment for your club.
Yeah. You've probably done it though, getting to that level.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't even FIFA has that functionality. Like, it's not part of the celebrations angle. They don't have the retaliation button. Rudy Camacho, man, let's just get into this this Wednesday night action. Canadian Championship, U.S. Open Cup, I miss you because Canadian Championship is reminding me of just sort of the insanity that can come with some of these moments and just always comes, it seems, with the Montreal Impact in this tournament. Rudy Camacho gets wound up by Freddie Montero. He thought he got fouled. This is a game of Montreal Impact need to win. It's a scoreless game. And all of a sudden, Freddie Montero is standing over him. And all of a sudden, Rudy Camacho is like a petulant little brother, I want to say. Like this punch to the knee feels to me like something that my brother and I would do to each other because like you can hurt each other, but you know it's not really going to hurt each other. And it's more like a petty thing than it is like I'm truly trying to injure you thing. But
yeah, it's a weak thing.
Bingo, here comes the red card. Adios, Rudy Camacho. By the way, you did it in the box. So it's a PK. Freddie Montero makes it and scores it, his 69th goal in MLS, which is the most fitting thing of all time. This whole thing is just a present wrapped up in a box for me. Thoughts on this moment? When you watched it, I had to rewind it 5 times. I've rewatched it this morning 15 times. The punch, the face, the little
gosh, you go first.
Rudy afterwards.
Lose it on this whole
situation. I would say, for starters, Rudy Camacho is having a pretty bad month. That's the first thought. That's a fact. He didn't want to play. He came out and said it against Toronto, which was fair. Then they lost the game. Now he comes in here. Montreal wins this game by any scoreline. They could win 7-6 or 1-0. They're going to the Canadian Championship final. And then he punches a guy in the knee for no reason.
Yeah, that's the part that really gets to you. That, like, it didn't. What got pushed over? Yeah, like it was a foul, sure, and like I think the referee should have called the foul. I get why he'd be mad. I get why Thierry Henry would be mad.
Mm-hmm. Like, right,
Charlie, help me understand. In that moment, the only time I've seen anything like this happen on a, I don't know, I guess things have happened that have been similarly stupid on an instant replay, but just like a petulant, pointless thing. I had a friend of mine in 8th grade punch a kid in the face who came in on a bad tackle on him and got sent off in a crucial match. Like, how does this happen? You know, and not only do you know, you chose like the weakest thing to do with a guaranteed red card, which is just kind of like punch him in the knee.
You know, I've been in a situation where I'm frustrated. It just took me back to my first game where Bob Bradley came out to Sweden to watch me play. And I was playing against Alejandro Bedoya's Orobro side. And this was just before the World Cup qualifying game in Chicago before Confederations Cup. So I'm trying to impress. I'm trying to show Bob everything I can do and how, you know, I've kind of been excelling in Sweden. So this defender is just kicking me and he's kicking me off the ball, kicking me. And, you know, I hadn't scored. I was frustrated. They were triple teaming me at times. So I'm like, the ball was down there and he kicks me on the heel. The ball is like by our goal. And I just wound up and just, I wanted to just get him right in the chest, but I caught him right in the lip off the ball. And he drops. And I kind of run or pretend like I was running out to like check for the ball. And
you're
then
doing,
like,
you're doing the arm. You're like, no, I'm just stretching my chest out
like,
a little bit.
I was just like, I was just taking off to go for a run. Like and I didn't get a card. And then they reviewed the tape and then they gave me 5 games while I was away with the U.S. men's national team. So I served the 5 games while I was in Confederations Cups, which worked out. But
classic, it's always coming up, Charlie, you know?
Yeah,
if you're going to retaliate, typically as a defender, you wait. You're like, okay, I got that in my mind.
Yeah,
I'm going to line you up at some point in this game, whether it's a set piece or you don't sit on where you're on the ground. Everyone's looking at you and you do a little baby punch to his knee.
Like, it wasn't even Freddie Montero that fouled him either. This was just like straight. I mean, he lost his mind.
It reminded me of a little temper tantrum.
Literally. You wait until it's like the ball's coming in and you're behind him.
Charlie's watching the game, turns and yells at the Twins because he just assumes it was
them. Settle down! I told you not to hit your brother. Stop fighting!
It was poor. And then you couple the fact that you're in the box and you give a pen away. The team is struggling. He's been struggling all year. One of probably the weaker spots on the Montreal's roster. And then you want to make it even worse and compound the fact by doing a little baby punch to get sent off. Like, come on. I don't have time for that. I don't even have time for that. I can't imagine Thierry Henry.
The stare, the death stare.
Oh, my gosh.
Can I just say, it sucks to be Shamit Schoen, who gets to start in this game and you're like jacked up. And then Rudy Camacho punches someone. So now they got to bring on a center back. So now your night is done in the 30 whatever minute. You didn't even do anything wrong. That's unfair. Yeah.
It is unfair. Also, I just want to establish for all the listeners out there, in the rundown meeting, we asked Charlie if he'd seen anything like this in his career. And he was like, I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. And then he comes out with the 5-game suspension. Real and hammer being Orbro. Class move. Look, Vancouver Whitecaps, congratulations. You needed the win. You got it. Well done. And bigger congratulations, basically in absentia, to Toronto FC, who are now headed to the Canadian Championship Final, Voyagers Cup, baby, and we're about to find out who they're going to play. Who they got, Dave?
Saturday, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, Island Games, CPL Championship, Hamilton Forge against HFX Wanderers, otherwise known as Halifax. It's going to be an awesome game. Halifax, so they did basically a Final Four, but it was a group stage, which leads you to the weird scenario where HFX lost 5-0 in their final game, but they made the final already. So they're coming off a 5-0 loss. Pacific FC, shout out Pamo Daka, legend. And now they have to go play a final against Hamilton, who won the championship last year. They're by far the best team in the league. They have Kyle Becker, who sits in at midfield.
Eagles
in college. Yeah,
BC Eagle. They have Kwame Awuwa, who played for NYCFC. So they have really aggressive fullbacks who go high. Becker drops in. They have a center back who I love, who Charlie knows about because I sent it to him, who can also play the ball really well. And they've got a ton of depth up top. Mo Babuli, former TFC legend, an option off the bench. They've got Novak as well, who scored a bunch of goals. So they're really dangerous. If they played Montreal in the final, I actually think they would control possession in that game. I think they would have more possession for a team in a league that's only 2 years old than the Montreal Impact, which would have been really interesting to see. They won't, obviously. And then on the flip side, HFX, coached by Stephen Hart, former Trinidad and Tobago national team coach, been in Canada forever, has a couple Soka Warriors that are good for him. Akeem Garcia up top is the golden boot leader. And so they're a team that can sit in, press, and then get opportunities and kill you in transition. So should be an interesting final. Forge should win. And if Forge plays in the Canadian Championship final, I actually think they have a shot to contend.
With Toronto?
Yeah.
Okay, can I ask a dumb question that seems very dumb that other people might be asking? Why is it called the Island Games?
Because they are playing on Edwards Island out in Eastern Canada. In a province that is all islands. So they're on an island. They're playing at a university's campus, which calls themselves Edwards Island University. So they called it the Island Games, very Caribbean.
All right, the more you know.
You want to hear something else crazy?
I assumed it was in the Caribbean. I was like, these CPL players are living the life in a time of COVID. I was like, well, we're down here on the beach, we're hanging out, we're isolated.
Yeah, but you're think in, about this.
The province.
MLS does a bubble in Florida in July, and it's like 105 degrees at kickoff. This tournament, they're playing noon games and it's 63 degrees. Like sunny. They're on the Newfoundland coast. Beautiful water. I think it's a setup. For the sweaters out there, it's the
same. I mean, now that you've said Newfoundland, I'm sold. That sounds like paradise.
Also, that might be wrong. I don't know my Canadian.
Speaking of paradise, Santi Mosquera was in his paradise on Wednesday night. That was a terrible. That's like a 43 transition right there. That was awful. But nobody had Santi Mosquera hat trick. You know, the bookies never would have picked this. Nobody in their right mind would have picked this. Santi Mosquera would not have picked this himself. 4-1 win for FC Dallas against Colorado Rapids. We're coming off a whooping of RSL, but now are getting whooped themselves. And there was no momentum to be had, apparently, and everybody is either bad or middling or just a little bit good, and they vacillate between. But it's a good win for Dallas, and it's more of Requarte. We've got somebody hitting us up, Hank from Salt Lake City, saying, throwing it out there, y'all haven't made enough of the fact that FCD got Requarte, who's Independiente Medellin's captain, reigning assist champion in Colombia, and a guy that Pibe Valderrama once called up to the full Colombian national team. He's been stellar. He has been stellar. What did you think of this game, guys? What are the big takeaways, if any?
Do you want me to go first? I think I'll be more positive than
sure. Yeah. Let's start with the high, and then you can cut my knees out from under me after that.
So I think I don't know that Hank's right, because I think we've made a decent deal of Requarte. But when he signed, what I said, and similar to what I said with Frank O'Hara, was he brings a different element than anyone else on the team. And so Requarte is going to start 100% of the games at home against a team like Colorado, where they're going to have more possession, where they need to create against low blocks that time. He probably isn't going to start a whole lot at LAFC and at Seattle when they're a team that's going to try and sit and play in transition. But this is why you brought him in, because you have players who can win games like that for you. You didn't have this. This is a true 10. The game goes through. I look at the first half of this game. Colorado was on the front foot. Jonathan Lewis hits the post. I'd say the first 25, 30 minutes, Colorado has possession. And then Requarte gets the ball, perfectly timed through ball to Barrios. He sets up an opportunity for Jara, and the whole game shifts from there. And then they slowly start to build and build. So he gives them that element that they just didn't have before, and he does it at a high level. And that's the part where, yeah, money's a little weird right now in the world. So they had an opportunity to not go and get a 21-year-old player from Colombia, but a 28-year-old who's experienced, who's led teams before, who's going to step in and affect your team immediately. And they didn't have that.
But for FC Dallas, I mean, part of me wonders, like, and I get why you would go sign the 21-year-old, but with what's coming through their academy, maybe it is better, if you're looking for that balance, to go sign this Requarte player. But the Rapids, Charlie, not ideal.
No.
Could be better. Give me a quick thought. I don't want to get dragged too far down, because, okay, you know, I was loving this team last year. Yeah. I had high hopes this year. Nah.
The strange part about this game was, one, it wasn't quality. There was no fluidity. There was rhythm. No rhythm. It was an ugly match to begin with. But Dallas, was arguably worse. I mean, they didn't control possession. They only had 77 passes in the final third. There wasn't a lot of combination plays. Now Mosquera it was like completely against the run of play. And like they'd have a counterattack with Barrios, and he would dribble by two people and then whip in across. And then, you know, they only had 8 crosses on the total match. 8 crosses. 8. And Frank O'Hara, for me, is not someone who I think is going to deliver you a championship or be one of those top strikers in the league when you're talking about Rui Diaz or Joseph Martinez, some of these players that can change a game. For me, Frank O'Hara is just a consistent player who can hold up the ball, but he's not going to get you anywhere near 15 to 20 goals a season.
But he may not have to.
He may not have to, but I think he will have to for Dallas to win an MLS Cup.
But he's an addition to what they were last year. And last year, they were a whisker away from beating the Sounders on the road in the playoffs and going to the next round. And I think he's an upgrade on what Cobra was.
Is he that much of an upgrade, though?
Yeah. This is a 31-year-old who has scored double digits every year in Liga MX for good teams and has won championships.
Okay,
I think he's a cleaner finisher.
My only argument to that is Hercules Gomez did the same thing in Mexico.
Different. He was a starter. Hercules Gomez was a borderline starter most of the time.
No, that's not true.
He came off the bench a lot.
He won Golden Boot, and he was a starter.
He
was an impact sub as the Golden Boot winner, Charlie. Don't try to change history on us right now.
Oh,
he was a starter
in that league. He was a starter.
He went to teams where he started. But
look, Dallas are fourth in the West. The Rapids are not.
Regardless.
Give me 30 seconds on the Rapids back. Right now. And let's flush this game from our memories.
They make too many mistakes. Whether it's in the transition play, you have possession. They dominated possession against Dallas, yet it was in the middle of the field. There was no dangerous balls in behind. They weren't connecting. There's no it's almost like they just play the ball. There's no identity. There's not an idea of how they want to get at teams. You have 31 crosses. The Colorado Rapids had 31 crosses and only 13% connected. Like, I use those percentages so people understand how it looks. It's just not entertaining. It looks poor. And then to lose 4-1, you get absolutely thrashed. It's a team that is just so inconsistent. And that's putting it like mildly. This is a team that I think is in trouble.
And that's what Nomley was supposed to fix. And I actually think he's super talented, but he's not that player. Mm-hmm. He is a pick up the ball in spots, wants to float out wide and attack guys every once in a while.
Yeah.
And he's not a you play through him, similar to he's not Requarte, which is you play through him and he can control the flow of play, or Reynoso, or whatever else, the guys that we've seen.
Nicolas and he's not Berrios either, where it's like, okay, he's going to have issues in the final third sometimes, but he's going to be in good spots because he's so direct.
I don't know that comparing him to Berrios is an up compliment. Or an up
Okay, so Nomley for me is, when I watch him, it's a lot of get the ball in a wide position, 3 out of 4 times make a back pass. Is that fair, or is that, or am I seeing something that you're not seeing?
I don't know that I totally see that. I would say most of the time there's no one in front of him. That's you fair. Don't want it to him lose possession totally. But I think when he attacks with the ball, he created the goal that got them to tie against SKC at home, which was their only result for like a month, because he drove at the back line and created that opportunity and laid a ball off. That was well timed.
Do we make anything out of Kai Kamara not being on the field for the second game? Is this something that we're going to see more often? Is this a transition? Is this kind of like...
I'm not. No, I don't know.
We're going to go in a Rubio different direction.
This year, the goals haven't been there for Diego Rubio, but that's across the board. Chinyashiki got his first goal this year in this match. This is the rookie of the year. He had 7 last year. You would have expected him to take like a jump forward. And Jonathan Lewis, again, to go back to your consistency point, it's not there. I mean, I don't want to belabor this because I feel like we have more fun stuff to talk about. Let's do it with Steve Zakuani. It's an AT&T 5G call to the field. Steve Zakuani, what's up, man? Dining room life. Yeah, I can see. It's beautiful. Very formal. Very formal of you. We'll try to keep this not formal. We'll start with this. Before we get to Portland and San Jose, what was your FIFA rating, and did you like it or have beef with the way that they judged you back in the day?
Definitely have beef. I think the highest was 75. Could have been a little bit higher. But I think they got me about 75, which, you know, I'll take it for now. I'll take it.
So I'm just guessing, I don't know, but Charlie was talking about his before, and he seemed to allude that his highest attribute was speed.
He threw 95 out there, which I'm going to have to go back and check those Hammerby days.
They gave him 95. Yeah, I was a 95. I was like
92,
93. Yeah.
Time out. We don't have confirmation of the 95, though.
No, but I respect your speed. It was good. You know, you just would have been right there, you know, just a little bit behind.
I'll give it to you. You're quick.
Oh, man. All right, let's get into the soccer, Steve. You've been doing great work for MLSsoccer.com. Love your voice there. So many breakdowns for midweek, the weekends, thoughts on every team, which at the top of the show I said, I pity you. You're doing a great job so far, and I'm sure you'll do a wonderful job to continue.
You guys, by the way, I found research on FIFA ratings. There's one person in this chat that's a liar, but I won't point fingers.
Oh.
How do you go, Charlie? How do you go to Charlie? Way? Yeah.
I'm just saying, Charlie, 91's not 95.
Ooh.
It was 95.
Maybe in Sweden, maybe on the conversions.
The Swedish version of FIFA that year. Steve, Portland and San Jose, 1-1 draw last night. Who should be more worried, in your opinion?
I think from that game, San Jose probably will feel they deserve to win. Overall, worried, I'd be more worried if I was San Jose, because I think Portland, they haven't been great since coming back from MLS's back tournament, but they have enough players who've been there and done it that when it's time to figure it out, they will. I'm thinking of the two Diegos, Valeri and Chara. Those two in particular, I watched them play in Seattle about 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago, and they were fantastic. Valeri was back to like his Valeri best. Chara was fantastic. Williamson in the middle was good. So I think overall, they will be okay. San Jose, funny enough, was my sort of dark horse to maybe do something this season, because what they did last season, and it just doesn't look good for them. And I feel they're more prone to slip backwards than go forwards, even though I did think they probably shaded last night and maybe could have deserved a point.
Does Mateus Almeida have to change the way he plays? Or is that, he says he's not going to do it. So this is maybe a moot question. So I don't know.
I think he has to. I covered the game when Seattle beat them 7-1 and I couldn't believe the tactics. I mean, they were man marking all over the pitch. And I think if you've watched Jordan Morris and you conclude that the best way to stop him is to man mark him at the halfway line and leave 50 yards of space in behind, I don't know how you come up with that. So
Steve, you and I, put in our prime, mark us 1v1. Please.
Exactly, right?
He's like, come out to the touchline. Follow me out here.
Exactly. They played right into it. And they were down 3-0 in 15 minutes, 4-0 in 20 minutes, and there was zero adjustment. So I think you can be a coach who has a system and a style. At some point, you have to make adjustments. And I think that he has to kind of change some of his ways a little bit. I don't think the players he has suits that system right now. And for that reason, even yesterday, I mean, they attack sometimes and keep one player back. And they invite the counterattack all the times. And on the wrong day, like it was in Washington for them, they can get hit pretty bad. So I think he has to adjust at some point.
What was that day like? I mean, I assume you're down on the field watching. Are you in the booth? Where are you?
I'm not allowed on the field at this point. No one is, just the players. So I was up in the booth. And it was weird because we wanted to celebrate what Seattle were doing, but we couldn't hide that a part of it was just how bad San Jose was. Like, I think the Sounders were very good that day. I remember Ladero being on his game, Jovan Jones, like his old self, Ruby Diaz doing what he does. But I couldn't help but notice just how bad San Jose was. I mean, the middle of the field was just wide open because the Sounders were just pulling wide. San Jose were man-marking them. And then as soon as Jordan ran inside or Ruby Diaz ran inside, they were 1v1. So I think it was a weird game to call. At one point, we thought it was going to be 12-0. Actually, because they were going to score every time they attack. So we gave the Sounders credit for sure, but it was just as much probably how bad on that day San Jose was.
Yeah.
I commend you for recognizing that.
I'm imagining right now a race.
True professionalism.
In the prime of Charlie Davies, Steve Zakuani, and Jordan Morris. Be honest, both of you.
I've talked to Jordan. So here's what I'll say. So I don't know. I think me and Charlie, with the ball, were faster. I was faster with the ball than without. So I think that's why I'm not really in those conversations. But I don't think I had raw just running behind pace. I prefer running with the ball. And I know for a fact I'm faster than Jordan with the ball. I know that for a fact. So Charlie can have his say, his view, but I know with the ball, I was pretty good.
The question is, can we trust anything Charlie says about this?
Yeah.
At this point, who knows? Yeah.
I think you both can agree that without the ball, I was probably a little quicker because I was that guy that liked to make those long runs in behind. So I was definitely, I think, a little quicker without the ball than I was with the ball.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think without the ball, Charlie gets me. With the ball, I just remember that was when I felt at my fastest. Just
but flying. Steve, I'm impressed you didn't wear your Jordan Morris jersey to come on this show right now. The best attacking player in MLS, the future of CONCACAF. I don't know what happened over the last week, but apparently now Jordan Morris isn't a national team starter, but is the best attacking player. What is going on in the Seattle digital world and what happened?
You know what it is? It's like, because we get to see him often. I see him a lot. And I've just seen the evolution, I think, since the Gold Cup last year. And even when he just came back from the ACL injury, he looks different. I mean, when he first came to the team, there was serious limitation on his game. His left foot was not good. He did not want to go left. He would actually beat you on the left and then tried to like use the outside of his right foot and wouldn't do well. He's worked on that since he's come back. He's one-on-one finishing now. When he gets through on goal, his composure is unbelievable and it's improved a lot. There still are limitations to his game, don't get me wrong. So I think the word that I really was going for, rather than best, is dangerous, because I think he's a very dangerous player. And I think Carlos Vela, for me, is in a league of his own. I don't count Joseph Martinez right now because he's injured. From everyone else, in terms of just, if I was a right back, who do I not want to face on their best day? It's going to be Jordan Morris, because he's just, you can't keep up with him. He's unbelievably quick. He knows how to use his pace now. Extremely physical. And he's improved when he gets in the box. His one-on-one finishing is the best it's been here. He can use his left foot. He can come inside. He's learning to play with Nico Lodero, because those guys like to combine and play little one-twos and things like that. And Jordan, that was in his game. So I think he's learning that. And yeah, I'm biased. I've known Jordan since Jordan was 14, 15, training with the first team. So I've known Jordan for a very long time. So maybe I'm a bit biased as well. But I do think his numbers back this up to an extent. And there's guys you can argue. I mean, Diego Rossi probably wouldn't be happy with me. Probably a couple other guys in that conversation.
I'd say the only other guy I'd throw just above Jordan Morris is Christian Pavone right now. That's the only player.
And he's one of my favorite players. Yeah, so he's, yeah, exactly. So you can, there is room here, but I think Jordan for a long time was limited. And when I've seen someone really work on the game and make the improvements he's made, I think that's why I want to give him that credit.
Can I ask you what you saw? I mean, you've known him for so long. We're talking about a decade at this point. So you're not hesitating here. And I'm sure you guys have had this conversation. He obviously knows there are limitations. How did he fix those? What did he do?
So I'll give a lot of credit to Preki, because he works with Preki a lot on the training ground. And if you guys have been around Preki, Preki's a bit nuts. So Preki's like been insistent on the things they got to work on. So I know that through the people there that he's worked a lot with Preki. I know he's gotten better at watching film. It's not something that he probably did early in his career. He just relied on his natural ability. He's a very good player. But I think he's gotten better actually watching film and figuring out what it is he can do, where the spaces are. And I think it's just confidence. Because we used to tell him all the time, like, at first he looks like a forward that was being forced to play out wide. Mm-hmm. And now he looks like a winger. He looks just like a winger. I know in an ideal world, Jordan Morris would still want to be a center forward and preferably with a strike partner next to him. I know that for a fact, but I think it's accepted. I'm going to be out wide as long as Rui Diaz is here and we're playing a 4-2-3-1. Let me just be the best wide player I can be. So I think he's gone and worked on the specific things. His left foot, being able to dribble on the outside. And then because of his breakaway speed, he's going to get a lot of 1v1s and he's gotten better actually getting there, slowing the game down a little bit, finding the corners, and he's finishing really well right now.
But Steve, you talked about his progress, and I've seen it as well firsthand, just seeing how he looks comfortable and he can go both sides. His hold up play, his combination play. I think the use of his feet, both left and right. But we all talked about his high ceiling, his max potential, and how we'd like to see him go across overseas and test his talent over there in Europe. Is that still a possibility in his mind, or do you think he's set on being in Major League Soccer for the rest of his career?
No, I'm glad you asked. I think it is now. I think 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I think he was very happy here, very comfortable here. He's the hometown hero. Everybody loves Jordan here. You know, his dad's been the soundest team doctor for the longest time back when I was playing as well. So I think there was a feeling of being comfortable here. I think as he's seen how much better he's getting, how good he's getting, I think every player crosses your mind at some point of, I wonder what if, or what could I do over there? Now, is he going to go over to the EPL and play at the level of a Christian Pulisic? Probably not. That's something that I've never seen before. So maybe not that. But I think he can go to certain European teams and be successful. I think his skill set will translate. Once you have that kind of pace, it is just an advantage. And then you have to hone different skills around it. So I've not directly spoke to him about this. I've alluded to it in a couple of conversations. And Jordan, you know, doesn't give much away anyway. But I think the wheels are spinning in his mind and he's considering that at some point, if he gets a chance, I think he will take it, actually.
Charlie,
Steve,
Steve,
get this done for Charlie. I need Aubameyang, Lacazette, and Jordan Morris. Barrett, come on. Get this done for us. You got the Arsenal links. We need the USM. We got Chelsea. We got Barcelona going. We got Bayern.
Wow.
Come on.
Charlie, is he a starter? Jordan Morris on the national team. Like, that was what this whole craziness after Steve, you said that. And then look, Twitter gets a hold of things and it goes a whole different direction. And there was some really A+ narrative building going on out there. Is Jordan Morris in your mind, Charlie? I know you pay so much attention to this, do the podcast or deep in that world. To you, is he a starter on the national team right now?
And both of you know, I'm very passionate about the US men's national team. And I'm maybe too critical at times or too harsh. And I always go back to, when you're called up to the national team, you need to be doing it with your club team. You need to be performing. You need to be in form. And right now, Jordan Morris's form should give him a starting spot with the U.S. men's national team because he is showing what he can do. He's doing it in different ways, playing against different type of teams where teams either sit back or they press him, they're aggressive. He finds a way to make an impact. When you have a player who's playing at that level, it's easy to transition into the national team because your confidence is that high and you want those players getting the minute. So I think right now at this moment, he's a starter.
Boom. He just gaveled you, internet, soccer, Twitter, gavel, landing right now. Can we, everybody raise their hand. Alistair Brewer hit us up, Steve, and he asked from, I'm assuming he's from Seattle. He says, the win was nice. We liked 7-1, but why does Arriaga get called for every foul when he gets hit or stepped on? Bogus PK. I say that's a PK. I say that's a PK. Anybody going to? Yes.
No.
He lunges. He lunges. He lunges, misses the ball. What are you
gonna do? He lunges, misses the ball, and misses the man. The guy steps on his foot and fell over. No
He's
way.
Running. Yeah, Tommy yeah, Thompson is trying to make a soccer play.
Steve-O's right there.
No way. How are you
getting fouled if you're stepping on somebody?
Yeah.
Answer that question.
That one was, and listen, Arriaga commits a lot of fouls a game. I mean, he's due for a penalty every game, but that one wasn't a penalty. I can't.
No, I still don't agree. I still don't agree.
Think about it, Weeby. You're running by somebody and you step
and
on their leg.
They step into where you are running. He lunged. He tried to win the ball. He missed it by a mile.
Think about that.
The guy's
You stepped into a place that they're trying to go. They step on you and it's your causing
Tommy,
the foul.
Who's under control right there, Charlie? Who's under control? The attacking player or the defensive player?
It doesn't matter who's under control.
Yeah, it does.
Why does it matter?
It does. The defender lunges into space and he doesn't win anything.
If I'm standing somewhere, maybe, and someone runs through me, it's not my foul.
No, that's like someone's taking a shot. But
Arriaga is not standing, buddy. He's lunging in to try to win the ball and missing by two feet. Anyway, I can't let this continue because nobody's going to agree here.
This is narrative building.
Yes, this is. Instant replay. Hashtag. Hit us up. Love it. Roger Gonzalez at CBS says DeAndre Yedlin wants to leave Newcastle before the end of the window. Oh, boy.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Wow, the Akron connection. Those who are listening, we got Teal Bumper here with us.
That's my boy.
I can't hear him.
Live? He just said,
Steel, we are
said,
currently
he,
working.
He said, what's up?
Yes.
He said, grime scene for Steve.
Yes,
says,
I did.
All right, now we got to get Nagby, Perry.
Yeah, come on.
Let's get the Akron squad together. Yeah.
Ampai Patakwong, can we get him in here? DeAndre Yedlin to the Sounders. Could it happen, Steve? Should it happen?
Both sides would want it. Yes. Both sides would want it. I know that for a fact. I talked to DeAndre. I was with him maybe like a year ago. Spent some time with him in Newcastle. And at the time, you know, he wasn't saying now, but he would like to finish his career here in Seattle. Like Jordan, this is his home. His family's still here. His mom, his sister, his friends. So if in an ideal world they could make it work, I think both would. I'm not sure exactly what's happening at Newcastle. It looks to be on the outside in. I've not really spoken to him much. But I don't know that it can happen with just what's in place in MLS. So I think due to the way it's set up right now, I don't foresee him coming back anytime soon, although I think they both would like to have him back.
So do you think he'd be happy to come back and play for a different MLS team?
If he had to, yes. But yeah. Seattle was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then maybe in 6th place somewhere else. If he had to, yes. But even then, he would have an out of Seattle. I know he wants to finish his story, his arc. What he wants is to finish his career here in Seattle, I think.
Let's say it happened. Let's say, you know, all the logistical stuff somehow, some way comes to fruition at the end of the window. It's a deadline move. Where would Seattle play DeAndre Yedlin right now? Because I don't think you can't take Weirdam out of the lineup, can you?
He's got to come in and fight Leerdam. Leerdam's scoring every week, so he can't go out. So it's like Kelvin Leerdam's been consistent, and you know what you're getting out of him every week. So it'd be kind of harsh to take him out. I think, DeAndre, if he came, would have to come in and compete. The only scenario I can see is if you're playing with wing backs, DeAndre's strengths are maybe better suited to that. Would Seattle do sometimes on the road, a 3-5-2 on the road? Sometimes I can see DeAndre being more suited to that, and maybe late on in games you can play both of them on the right hand side. But no, he'd have a fight on his hands because Kelvin Leerdam's, you know, he's playing incredible football right now, and he's one of the first names on the team sheet at this moment. So it would be a challenge in that sense.
Who are the top three teams in MLS in your mind right now, Steve? We had a challenging discussion about this because you read the power rankings and the schedule is all messed up. It's all imbalanced. Teams are rotating like crazy. Sometimes you don't believe what you see with your eyes from game to game because it's so different. In your mind, who are the best three teams in MLS right now?
So I definitely think some teams are benefiting from the schedule more than others. Clearly. Some teams are in a dogfight every single day.
So you're saying you want to play FC Cincinnati more if you're...
Your words, yeah. So, but no, the best team in the league is Columbus Crew, and they've only conceded 4 goals this season. I think that is the standout stat for that team. I don't think they're too flashy. They're maybe what the LAFC were last year or Atlanta before them, but they're the most efficient team. And I think, you know, when you have the spine of Mensah, Nagbe, Zelarayan, and now Zardes with the goals he's scoring, and they're always going to get goals and they very rarely concede, I think that's the best team. Second best team in the league at this moment, it's going to be a toss-up between the Sounders and Sporting Kansas City. That's a tough one because I like what I've seen from Sporting Kansas City. I do like what I've seen. They had a little wobble at a certain point, but I like what I've seen for them. So I'll go those two and three, and you can flip them in any direction, probably. And yeah, I would say I feel the West is still a little bit stronger. And what's crazy is I still think LAFC have the best attack from what I've seen. And they just concede 3 goals every game, but no one plays like them. The way they attack, even without Carlos Vela, I would hate to be a defender facing that team. They come at you from all angles, but they're just conceding so many goals. So they're on the outside because of that, but those three I'd probably go with.
So real quick, you know Caleb Porter probably better than anyone else in MLS. What has he done? What does he want this team to do? Like, what are the Columbus Crew in your mind going to be over the next few months and years?
He traded for Darlington Nagbe. That's the first key for Caleb Porter team. It's like any team he has, he needs that guy in the team. They know each other so well. And the thing is, Nagbe will do any job. He plays as a 6, and then there was one game Zelarayan was missing, and they played Nagbe at the 10, and it was unbelievable. You can play him on the wing, you can play him. So having that guy in the middle, he lets him build the rest of his team. So every Caleb Porter team needs this. So he needs a leader at the back, a strong center back. He's checked any team he's been at that's been successful. He needs that voice in the back. Then he needs Nagbe in the midfield. He needs a good number 10, and someone up top who's not the best player on the team, but can put the ball in the back of the net. He doesn't need amazing left back, right back, or wingers even. He doesn't need that. They need to be competent. It's the spine of the team that he needs. And he's got that right. Zelarayan looks like the real deal. Every time I've seen him play, he looks like what Valeri was for Caleb Porter in Portland in those early years. So just has a strong spine. And his best attribute is he gets you to believe that you're better than you even are. He comes to a place and because he's an intense person, and you guys know, and he believes that winning should be an expectation. And he sets that in motion pretty early, I think. And I think he's done that there. You can see the team's very confident and he's getting the best out of everyone. I mean, Zardes is scoring goals for fun. Everyone seems to be enjoying the way they're playing. He's getting his rotations right. So I think he just has the makeup of a Caleb Porter team. And I think they're going to take some beating. Because they don't concede many goals. So to beat them, you're going to have to be on your A game offensively. They're going to score. So they can easily be the team to come out of the East and be in MLS Cup easily.
We're talking about number 9s here in relation to Zardes. And you kind of said he doesn't have to be the best. He just has to do his job the best. I don't think that's the case for Gonzalo Higuain personally. I think the expectations on him are he has to be an MVP candidate. He has to change Inter Miami. What do you think he will be in this league? Again, it's not official. But the owner's taking pictures at the airport. So it's official, but it's not official. What can he be?
I always struggle. And maybe Charlie can answer this better than me because I was in a striker. But with big-time strikers coming here, I always struggle with because where they're coming from, they're getting the best service from their midfielders. Mm-hmm. It's like you want the ball here on my left foot at this speed. It's coming to your left foot at that speed. That's not always guaranteed here. So when Zlatan first came, I had serious doubts, but I didn't think he'd get the service he could. Obviously, he completely proved me wrong because he's an animal and he can just do whatever what he wants to do. I don't know that Higuain is that kind of player. So it's going to depend a lot on the players around him. He's not a guy that can pick the ball up, dribble 5 guys, and always consistently create his own shot. That's not the kind of player he is. So it's more going to... He's going to be fine. If he gets the chances, he can be a 20-goal scorer, without question. The quality is there. Obviously, he's played at the highest level. He's played with the national team for Argentina for many, many years at this point. So that's not an issue whatsoever. I think what I struggle to see is him getting consistent quality service to create those chances. And for that reason, I think it's going to be so-so.
Charlie, what do you think?
I think we've seen the accomplished strikers in Europe that come over here and have a ton of success because typically the center backs in this league aren't the strongest. And so for that reason alone, I think he's still going to have success. Now, how much success? I think that's the question that Steve-O is asking because you have Pizarro, you have Matuidi, you have some of these players who have played at a high level who will get him the ball. But it comes down to, you know, are they going to make it one-dimensional? We saw Zlatan. he didn't have the best service, but because of the player he is, he could still make do with the balls that he had because of his size, because of his quality. The goal he introduced himself to Major League Soccer, it's a bouncing ball midfield. He strikes it from 40 yards. You know, it's Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Okay, that's what you pay, the price you pay to get a player like that. Higuain is a player that thrives on those little through balls and the connection, the chemistry. He's got to be in sync with the players around him. And from what we've seen from Inter Miami, they don't really have that going right now. So for me, I do believe he's that type of player who's going to score 20 goals a season if he gets service. But if he doesn't, probably more in the 15 goal range. But this is a player who has quality, and I think he'll be successful here.
Can I just push back a little and say, you mentioned the experienced strikers coming here and having success. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of them weren't players who created much in Europe, and they came here like a Rooney, like a Robbie Keane, like Zlatan, who were better build-up creative players in this league, I think because of the high level that they have, just technically in soccer IQ. So I think Higuain will add that to his game because he's Gonzalo Higuain, mm-hmm. and he's coming here, and he's going to have more touches, and there'll be more space. And you'll see the fact that, yeah, he wasn't going to do that on Juve because the guys behind him are world-class. But when he drops in, I was surprised by how well Rooney did it in DC. And I think you're going to see some of that with Higuain.
I think he did a lot of that last year with Juve, if you look at his role. He wasn't like a 9 high in the box every time service comes to me player. He played a lot in wide areas and had to be the guy that fed the Dybalas of the world and Ronaldo. I think it's going to be success. We'll see. We do know right now, one thing we know, we have two big Houston guys in this podcast. Huge Dynamo guys. We know Charlie Davies. Oh, Dynamo. I mean, that's an orange jersey, has the wrong crest on it. But this is a quote from you, Steve. I read out everything you do, and I copied this one down. Quote, I'm very high on what Houston can become. This team is downright scary at their very best, and I believe they can challenge for first place in the West. That was pre-Albert Elise move, so I'll give you credit on that one.
Which is
that's a big pre. You also flagged piece. The defense, which was a great point as well. Walk me through your Houston viewpoint right now, your take.
And does it still stand without Elise?
It's tough because he was in my thinking for that, because what I was thinking, Todd Ramos was getting the best out of all of them. So first I'll begin with Darwin Quintero. So he's outside of the international friendlies I played against, Barcelona, Chelsea, those kinds of teams, in a real game, Quintero was the best player I ever played by far. When he was at Santos Laguna, it wasn't even fair. Now, he was playing attacking mid. And I spoke to Hercules Gomez about him several times because I just couldn't believe how good this guy was. Like, he had a skill set of a winger, but he played inside, good combination, dribble past everybody, was scoring goals for fun, had a great connection with Peralta. So when he came to MLS, I knew he'd be special. And there were glimpses in Minnesota. He scored a mm-hmm. crazy hat-trick versus Toronto, etc. I think Todd Ramos is the coach for him because he's getting the best out of him. You can see Quintero's more committed. I've never seen him track back as much as he's doing now, run off the ball. He still can do more, but he's on his way up. I think him, at least when he was there, were the two when they countered, and they really countered, it was scary. Like, it was scary the way they were countered. They would send numbers forward. And if they lost it, those guys would press right away, win the ball back. And I put my money on them when they're within 30 yards of the goal. So that came more from that perspective. I think they'll still be good even without Elise. I think Todd Ramos is a very good coach and he's getting the most out of them. The question mark I have is the consistency. I feel like as the season wears on, I know what I'm going to get from Seattle Sounders. I know what I'm going to get from this season Sporting Kansas City. I assume once they figure out the defensive issue, LAFC, some of those better teams in the West, I know what I'll get from them. I would even put Portland. I think Portland are going to figure out what the issues are and they will make a run to close out the season. Houston, I don't know yet. At the very best, that's it. What they can be, very excited about. Will they become it? The task just got a little bit tougher without Elise.
What do we think of this move for Elise? We asked Rodrigo Carvalho on the last show about the move to Boavista, and it's not official again, but apparently, according to our guy Eduardo Solano, who knows, I mean, he probably asked Elise and he probably told him that Albert said goodbye to the Dynamo. Last 6 months of his deal, it's probably time to get something. Dave, what do you think about that move?
I think for Houston, there you had to weigh how competitive can we be in MLS with Albert Elise versus what is our franchise like. How much money do we have to get to sell him? And they probably missed on that a little bit. They probably could have sold him 6 months ago to a year ago and gotten more money for him. But on the flip side, they won a championship with him. They won a U.S. Open Cup. Houston Dynamo haven't won a final in 13 years now. So that was a big moment. And I think that's part of what you always have to weigh with these teams. And it felt like with Minotas coming through that they were at the time to sell Elise, replace him, then build up Minotas, sell him, replace him, and have that other guy in. I don't think it all timed out perfectly. And part of that goes down to what they built under Wilmer Cabrera wasn't long-term what they thought it was going to be. But in the end here, I agree with what Steve says, how dangerous they can be with him. I think they can be very dangerous without him. So I think it was worth getting something for him now rather than letting the contract run out.
And reportedly, they got another player in the pipeline from Argentina, Mateo Bajamish. We'll see about him soon enough. Rumor is $1.2 million. 9 goals in the second division last year and 21 appearances, a four-year deal. I mean, they got Manotas from Colombian second division. That's turned out pretty well, though. They got him, get him rolling again, too. From Albert's perspective, though, Charlie, you've made a move to a Hammarby where you were thinking this is going to be a stop on my path. Now, Albert is older. What do you think he's thinking, and is this the right type of move for him?
Yeah, I do think it's a right move. You're getting your foot in the door in Europe. I mean, that's why a lot of players would go to Scandinavia, because they know it's a stepping stone. It's a place where you're going to play. You're going to get a lot of minutes. And all the eyes across Europe are in these leagues because they're feeder leagues. And Portugal is a great feeder league because you're playing against Champions League competition in Porto and Benfica and Sporting. And you still have a great club in Braga who are always competing in Europa League. So for a player like him, Reggie Cannon, now Lille being involved in League One, it's a great stepping stone, because if you produce in Portugal, you're going to be streamlined to the French league, Ligue 1 at least, or you know, you're looking at the Bundesliga, La Liga, because that's typically where a lot of players like to go from Portugal. It's a smooth transition, but it's definitely a place you want to go, because you're going to get the playing time, and then you can kind of show where your game can go and the potential, and then for a lot of players, that's intriguing. That's what it's about.
Steve, your boy Henry Wingo is like 2 games from being in the Champions League group stage.
So I'm happy for him. I couldn't believe it, but yeah, I'm happy for him.
Do you think, Steve, and I'm working on a column about this right now as I think about Reggie Cannon, about what do you think about how MLS teams are navigating the transfer market? Because if you go back to what, December 2018, that was when Commissioner Don Garber came out and said, kind of to everyone's surprise, that it would be said publicly in this way, that MLS needed to become a selling league. And it's gotten better. I mean, Adams was, I think, the day he said that, Tyler Adams, Zach Steffen, and these are just homegrowns, Chris Richards, Henry Wingo, Joe Scali, Donnell Henry, Chris Durkin, Reggie Cannon.
Alfonso Davies.
Alfonso Davies was the summer before.
Okay, but he still got sold.
Yeah, he got sold, but it was the summer before. It's easy, I would say, to be like, we got to be a selling league when you're talking about Alfonso Davies and Tyler Adams. My contention is that MLS has to become a selling league maybe sometimes when they don't want to sell, but they don't feel like it's the right time, because they've done the succession planning the right way, because it's the only way to make a market. So, like, what do you think about how MLS is handling transfer dealings right now?
Yeah, no, I think it's actually not that bad. I think some teams are obviously better than others. I do agree that for the most part, it should be a selling league. I think the best model is what Atlanta did with Miguel Almirón. You get a young DP come in, completely lights up the league, phenomenal, and then you can sell him off to the EPL. Now, what they didn't do well is the follow-through. There was no succession plan to get that type of player in as well, and so they lost out a lot on him. But that's, if I was a GM of a club, or the head coach of a, not a head coach, a GM of a club, I'd be thinking along those lines, bringing in young, talented players with the goal of selling them off, because that is how you maybe gain a little bit more of an edge in MLS if you start generating that kind of profit. Now, I don't know that you know, every team is doing that well or is set up to do that. But if I was a decision maker in this league, I'd be setting myself up towards that. Like, if I was in the Sounders hot seat, I mean, I love having Jordan Morris here, but if he does this for another year, I mean, I'm 1,000% going to start entertaining calls and entertaining, telling him, like, you know, you should go and test yourself over there. That's what I would be doing. Because
let me take it down a level. Let me take it down one level to like a Danny Leyva or to, you know, let's say Sam Rogers. That may not be the right comparison, but I know he's in Spain right now. He was with Standard Liège last summer. Maybe there could have been a deal there where it's like you're producing players in your academy. Do we have to be more willing to move guys for $1 million, for $1.5 million, for Chris Durkin type numbers?
If you can get $1 million for Sam Rogers, you do it. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. But maybe it's not Sam Rogers. Maybe that's not the right, but maybe it's Danny Leyva. Maybe a Mexican team comes in and says, I got 1.5 in 2 years. here's a 25% sell on. I just feel like we don't do those deals enough.
Yeah, no, I would 100% do that. Yeah, for those two, I would do that.
Well, there's a fine balance, right? Of a player who is young, who can come right into the first team and make an impact, and those players are special. Those are the players you want to keep for 2-3 years to build his value, and then sell him on, like a Alphonso Davies, where you're looking to capitalize on a larger fee. But then there are players who have shown talent, but not really ready for first team. A team comes in that's interested in buying him, and you're like, all right, I'll sell him for a cheaper price with the sell on, right? I'm going to get that sell on 25%, even maybe push it up to 30, 35%. But those are the deals that you want to go out and make. And also you get the respect of other, whether it's academy kids coming, knowing that, hey, if I perform, I know I'm going to get my chance here because they've shown that they're going to sell me on. Or an international player saying, is this the right place to go to if I still want to play Champions League, if I still want to play in the top leagues in Europe? Can this still be a destination for me, a stepping stone, or are they going to keep me locked in?
But you need to win soccer games as well. Yeah, that has to be a part of this. So for you asked Steve about Sam Rogers or Danny Leyva, Seattle Sounders are a team that spends high on a first team roster of experienced players. So you don't need Danny Leyva to step in. But you look at FC Dallas, Paxton Pomykal, Jesus Ferreira, and Reggie Cannon are a major part of the first team, as well as the potential to sell on and build. So there has to be a balance. And to Charlie's point, I think, and Steve's, of like Almiron and building guys for 3 years, you have to have that timeline correct. But you can't sell everyone for whatever number you get when they're 17 because they have potential. Because at some point, if you have a good academy, it has to help you win at the first team level so that fans want to come and enjoy a soccer. Like, that's the point. It can't all be long-term planning financially.
But isn't, I'm not saying long-term planning only financially, but isn't FC Dallas perfectly in a position to sell Paxton Pomykal, to sell Reggie Cannon? They got Brian Reynolds just hanging out, like, going to be the next Reggie Cannon. They've got like five central midfielders who've done the job and made them a playoff team without Paxton Pomykal being consistent or uninjured. Ferreira's been good, but is he really the key to them being a championship contender when they go out and get Recuarte? That's all I'm saying. I'm just saying I think MLS needs to go more volume and be more willing to make sales.
Should Philly build around Brendan Aaronson or try to sell him?
Sell him to prove the pipeline so that the next five guys you can actually sell instead of sitting around saying that you've got offers and then never actually moving. But this is a longer conversation.
But Philly got a DP in Bedoya and got a DP in Montero, so yeah, they can still have midfield solidity and quality when selling them. Where other teams haven't, as we were talking about with Atlanta, haven't done the job to make sure that you're ready to move on when that guy is sold.
So that's what I'm saying, is that you've got to do the job so that you can make the sales. That's a big part of this. All right, last one for you, Steve.
Steve, who joined us over here?
My puppy. I'm going to sit down.
What's his name?
Denzel. After Denzel.
Class. Get him in the
training
frame.
Day, Denzel.
Get him in the frame. We have cats on the show every week. Bring him on. What does Denzel look like? Yeah.
He's a lab. He's a lab.
Okay. We can envision that. Last one for you here. David and Skokie hit us up. He's a Fire fan. He's talking about all these former Fire players that became head coaches in this league, whether it's Chris Armas or Jesse Marsh or Jim Curtin or CJ Brown, Zach Thornton, John Wolanek, Razov, Wolf, some assistants, obviously, a lot of head coaches there. He wonders who is most likely to be an MLS head coach from the players rank, but I want to take that back a step and ask you and Charlie, when you're in a locker room, how do you know which guys are going to be coaches? And how do you know who's going to be a good coach?
Yeah, I think there's the obvious one that you think the vocal guys, the vocal leader, the emotional leader of the team, like, you know, I played with a few of them where Some not just the rah-rah guy, but guys who, you know, kind of were very cerebral. Now I'm moving more towards the guys who are super into tactics. Like, it's a conversation I had with Kelvin Lid recently, actually, where he's picking the coach's brain all the time. Why are we doing this tactics? Why are we doing that in the session? Why are we doing that? So I think people who have that kind of interest in the game are good candidates to become head coaches. Because someone like Casey Keller, who I think I'm Charlie played with as well, he was a screamer. He was a rah-rah guy. He was that. But he didn't go into coaching, for example. He's on the broadcast side, where 10 years ago, I would have said Casey's going to be a head coach. So I think more it's the guys who have that interest in watching film, breaking down the tactics, understanding that side of it. And I think defenders and midfielders, for whatever reason, end up making the better coaches. I don't know why it's that way, but that's how it turns out.
And I'll second that. I've always known who understands the game, who doesn't, by by knowing if they watch games, if they enjoy sitting down and watching games and pointing out things and watching a certain position. If they don't do that, if they don't watch matches, you can't be a head coach. That's what you got to do all day, every day, is watch tactics, watch your team and watch the other team. And also, you're always learning as a head coach because you have to adapt. You can't just say, this is my style forever. This is how I think forever. And I'm not going to change. We've seen Pep Guardiola over the course of his time as a head coach, as good as he is, Jurgen Klopp, they change, they adapt because you're forced to, because teams all of a sudden say, oh, we know how they play. We got to change our style. And if you're not able to cope with that, then coaching is not your game. So I think we've seen coaches over the years develop and also develop with how they interact with players, being able to get the best out of each player and not saying, I'm just going to treat everyone the same. And that doesn't work anymore. So I think we've talked about the mental health issues with players and coaches have to be in tune with that. So I think Steve-O, like you're a player who's always been intrigued by, okay, this is how teams play. This is how a certain player defender is going to line up on me. So yeah, that's, I think, you know, right away who's got potential to be a coach versus who doesn't.
Who jumps out to you guys who as having that potential? Who's a current player in MLS?
I would be curious to see if I don't know if he's interested or not, if Carl Beckerman would want to become a coach. I don't know if he would be a good one or not, but I'd be intrigued to see Carl Beckerman. I like Carl a lot actually as a player. So he's maybe one that comes to mind because he was like the conductor for some of those great Salt Lake teams on the pitch. I know he would never do it. I know for a fact, but Chad Marshall would have been a good one. But I just know he has no interest. So I'd probably stick with Carl Beckerman.
What about Christian Roldan? Like, from way outside the Sounders, when I look at Christian Roldan, I think maybe he has that sort of personality.
I don't know that I'd see him becoming a coach. I can see him being like an assistant. I think a head coach is a bit there. Christian is a guy who comes in, knows his job, does his job. He's kind of the utility guy there. I think he'd be maybe a good guy to work with players one-on-one, an assistant. As a head coach, I don't know. Maybe, but I don't know.
So can I ask? There's a huge conversation that happens in basketball terms, and I don't know how much it happens in soccer, although we've heard it around Henry a bit, of like, first of all, centers never get coaching jobs, and a lot of star players don't get coaching jobs because people think it was so easy for you, don't know how to explain it. Do you have any take in the soccer world? Because you mentioned defenders and midfielders, of like, there's just people I don't even think can figure out how to explain the things they know how to do.
I think if you look at soccer, we all will have different lists. But if you take like the top five players of all time or top 10, only in that group could you reasonably argue that Johan Cruyff is the one that went on to be a top manager as well. No one else. And many of them tried. Maradona, disaster. It's like only Johan Cruyff. So I don't know. So that's when Thierry Henry became a coach. I thought it'd be difficult. I saw them play last night. They lost because they got the 10 men. I thought they were playing well up to that point. Because the game came so easy to him. Like, he might tell you, do this finishing drill. And you're like, I can't do that. And in his brain, he can't comprehend why you can't finish the ball in the top corner 9 times out of 10. So I think it might be a bit harder for those guys because they just shoot to such a high standard. But if the person's willing to do the work and learn and everything, they can do it. But I think for sure, because the top Mourinho, Klopp, Alex Ferguson, Arsene Wenger, they weren't top players. These guys weren't top players. And most of them were midfielders and defenders as well. Guardiola's maybe the top one of them. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't the best in his time. He was good, good enough to play in Barcelona, but he wasn't like the best player in the world. So I don't know. I think it's tough for the very, very best players maybe to relate to some of us.
I would say ego has a big, plays a big part in it, because like as a player, you devote your life to becoming the best player you can. But I think when you start as a coach, some players carry that ego as a player with them to the coaching side, and they have to understand you're starting from scratch. Mm-hmm. You have to build your resume and everything you've done as a player. That's gone. You have to start all over from scratch. And so if you can't check your ego at the door, then you're going to have problems as a coach, because you have to be able to relate. You have to be able to understand that it's not about me anymore. As a player, okay. But now as a coach, it's about the team, and I have to be the leader, and people have to look to me and have to be able to come to me with problems, and I can't look down at them because, you know, I was this level of player. So I think that's probably one of the tougher challenges of when you reach those levels, now trying to transition into being a coach.
Steve, We've had you long enough, man.
Can I ask Charlie a question? And you guys can chip in too. Oh, by the way, I'll add Zinedine Zidane to that as well. He's probably in that list as well.
He's pretty good.
So I want Charlie's take, and I want to see what you guys say as well. We didn't get to this. So I said that if I had a World Cup final tomorrow with a US national team, I needed number 9, I would play Jozy Altidore. And that's as much, one, because I think he's fantastic. I mean, I would have loved to play with him because you give him the ball, it sticks. He's so strong. He's good at laying the ball off. I like him. I think it's as much to do with that, also as much as the guys who had a chance to grab that spot before, while he's been injured, while he's been lacking form, they haven't done it. So I think you get both. So I muted the conversation, so I didn't see all of it, but I caught a lot of heat. I know I did. On Twitter, people weren't happy with me, but no one was giving me the name of who should replace him. All they were saying is, Jozy's terrible. Mm-hmm. He shouldn't play. I just want to know who should play. But as a former top striker for the US national team,
95 pace.
I'm curious.
95.
If you agree, or is there someone that you think, no, actually, I will start that person ahead of them?
There's not a single player, if everyone's fit, that I'm playing over Jozy Altidore right now. When you talk about experience, ability to finish, combine, connect, and just knowing that this is what it takes to win in certain atmospheres because you have that. Everyone else, is you're basing it on potential or hope. Nothing has been proven on the international level. And yeah, we all have to start somewhere. But when these players have had opportunities to really take the throne, so to speak, they haven't done it. And so if there isn't any argument, you can say over time, sure. Yeah, maybe that happens. But you look at all the strikers across the globe for U.S. men's national team options. No one's banging goals left and right. No one's doing it.
Jossie. But here's the difference. Here's the difference.
Charlie's about to get so mad at
him. To me, here's the difference. Jossie Zardes is reliant on that service, that system to get him in the right position. And he's great once he makes that run and he's there. His runs, his hold up play is much improved. He's a much better soccer player than give him credit for.
I agree.
But I don't.
He's much better than he was.
Jozy is like a level up for Christian Pulisic, for Jordan Morris, for Gio Reyna, for anyone you put around him. He's going to make all those guys better. And then he will also give you the goals. At the end, the only question you have with
The difference is technical ability.
Yeah.
He doesn't rely on just running in behind, which is what Jossie Zardes does. That's been his game, and there's no problem with that. But when you're talking about the international game, sometimes you need the striker to check deep, hold up the ball, and be able to combine to create space in behind for Christian Pulisic to run into, or Weston McKennie, or whoever,
Gio Reyna,
whoever it is, Jordan Morris. You need players who can do different things and impact the game in different ways on the international level. And I think Jossie Zardes just isn't there yet.
Long story short, Steve, you muted that conversation for good reason. All those replies, trash, all of them. Steve, tell people how they can catch you, man. This has been awesome. We should do this more often.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I am on Twitter, Zach111. So I go on there on the weekends.
But he mutes people.
But he's going to mute you.
I check on the weekends. But no, I'm doing some writing for MLS. So obviously, look up for some of those columns. That's been fun. Just trying to expand. Watching. It's been fun to watch more than just the Sounders. So some of those columns. And of course, if you're watching a Sounders game, you'll see us on there. We have a big one this Friday against LAFC. So, and then, yeah, no, I'm sure I'll be back on here in a few months.
Yeah, man. Steve, Denzel.
Appreciate your time, brother. Yeah.
I will. Thank you, guys. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. All right. Well, that was a good time with Steve-O, as you say. Steve Zakuani. Follow him on Twitter.
Yeah, I didn't know Charlie had nickname basis. Yeah, I didn't know Steve either. Zakuani. That made me so jealous in the middle of that interview.
It's all good.
You know, hit up Steve on Twitter. Just don't expect Steve to tweet back at you because you're probably muted. But he's doing great work at MLSsoccer.com with the columns and, of course, on all the Sounders broadcasts. So always enjoy having him on the show. Let's see. Before we get out of here, I don't know. We're going to talk about Atlanta United signing a new DP or almost signing. Marcelino Moreno from Lanús took over from where kind of Miguel Miron left off, 25 years old. More of like a 8-10 direct running central midfielder with good pace, good dribbling, and a little bit more physicality than, say, maybe a Barco or a Pity. At least that's the scouting report I got from Dirty South Soccer. Chris Smith over there had a good one talking to some journalists in Argentina. He's not exactly been super goal dangerous in his career. 6 goals, 13 assists in 106 games, but 3 goals, 6 assists this season. So they're buying him in form, motivated. And the sell-on's only 10%. So it sounds kind of like he's a guy that they think is a guy who would stick around long-term in Atlanta. Any thoughts on that? Their DP
spot? Yeah, I think...
Before a coach?
I just think what you saw with Barco and PT was two very specific players, and it didn't work. And I think this is a signing where it's a lower floor or a higher floor, where it's like he can play multiple positions. The other players you can bring in.
What? Bring him in. Bring him in. I see that little hand. I see that little hand sticking out.
They just got home from school. So
yeah.
What?
Oh my gosh, yeah. Boys.
Can you wave?
Reese, Dakota. That's the cutest thing I've ever seen. That makes me want to get my baby right now.
Okay, guys. I'll see you soon. Go upstairs.
Finish the take, Dave.
Bye.
So I would just say, I think this is a guy who you can put different people around him. I think that's the point of this signing is one, you don't know who the coach is. Two, you don't know the style. And two, you need someone who, let's be real, it sounds like Barco may not be there long term. You don't know what the future holds. You need someone where you can get different type of talent to put them around them. And you don't need to build around that person because you're not there yet as your club again.
Yep. But we'll see what happens. I think they will want to open up that other DP spot. That will depend on what happens with Barco, whether somebody comes in with an offer or he plays well enough to get one. Right now, all three DP spots, if this comes off, will be filled for Atlanta United. Can I ask you, Dave, when we do this mail here, 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com, who's putting the header in the rundown for the mails? Because this is Matt Turn-her, question mark. Is that you? There was one that was like, everybody hates the Sounders.
It's always me.
Oh, okay. They were very entertaining.
I entertain myself.
Okay, I enjoy them.
I don't expect anyone will read them, so I just go for me.
Can you,
Charlie, this one's for you, though.
Okay.
It's Taylor Buves.
I was going to say pronounce that.
Yeah. He said, can someone tell me why we stand about Matt Turner all of a sudden? He's as average as he's always been. In the top 10 MLS keepers for clean sheets, there's three American keepers ahead of him. Same goes for saves per game. In previous seasons, he didn't even crack the top 10. He's fine, but I feel like I'm missing something.
So the FIFA rankings
out. He is missing something.
Yeah, he wasn't anywhere close to the FIFA rankings, which were ridiculous for goalkeepers from MLS. Kenneth Vermeer, who's not even a starter and has been a train wreck.
Number one.
Was number one. I would also say to Matt or Taylor, before Charlie, you chime in here, that saves per game is a really garbage stat to measure goalkeepers on. It's like, it's a horrible stat. It's basically the guys who are under the most pressure. So like, for instance, for a long time, Matt Bush was that guy and Montreal, because he was just getting peppered every single game. That doesn't mean Matt Bush is a good or bad goalkeeper. It just means the system. Evan Bush, sorry, Anders, thank you. That was a real... Nobody was going to correct me. Everybody's going to just let me...
I was kind of sitting there and was like, how hard is Weeby going to lean into this?
You're just letting me...
One mention, I don't need to
You're just letting me drown in the water? Jeez. God. Okay, Charlie. Just jump in and save me, dude. Throw me the life preserver, okay?
Yeah, no, I mean, Kenneth Vermeer is a 76. I mean, he might be the worst goalkeeper in Major League Soccer that was starting for a while. So when you look at consistent keepers, I think one facet of a keeper's game that I always found impressive was if they're not involved for long periods of the time during a match, and then they're called upon, whether it's a critical chance, a through ball, and it's a 1v1, or just a wide open opportunity that most players will finish and they make that big save. That's when I was like, wow, this keeper stays in the game and someone that you can depend on to either get you points or you know, just keep it close. So Matt Turner is one of those players who has made a crazy growth in his game as far as his command of the box. He comes out, I think earlier on, he'd come out and he wasn't sure if he should punch it, if he should catch it, and how to approach a ball. Now when he comes out, he's sure. To his distribution, he'll get it, and he's always has his head up. He's looking to spring somebody into space, and he puts it on a rope. So this is a player who probably didn't use his feet all that often, and probably until 3 years ago, all he was relied on is to be a shot stopper. He didn't know about the intricacies of a match really until Brad Fiedel came up and said, "Whoa, you got all this talent, but you really need to know how to play the position properly and how to understand the game and really where you need to develop." And then I think he's just continued now with his goalkeeper coach, Kevin Hitchcock, who was with Chelsea at one point in the English Premier League. He understands, okay, this is how I get to be a top goalkeeper in certain aspects of the game, reading the game, organizing your defenders, all the little things that make an average goalie very good. because he's always been stellar when it comes to shot stopping. But now all those little things like reading the game, I think he's really developed into a top keeper. And he's a top for me, probably a top two American keepers in the league right now, consistently playing from week to week. And on this list, he should be no lower than four.
But that's what I wanted to ask you, the Steve Zakuani question. So Josie's starting up top in the September 18th, 2020 World Cup final for the U.S. national team. Is Matt Turner A, on that roster, and B, is he starting for the U.S.?
Yes, he's today. Yes, he's on that roster.
So starting, he's top three, right?
Starting Zach Steffen will probably get the nod. I mean, he's at Manchester City. Is he going to be playing week to week? No. Ederson is the top keeper there, but he's in that system. I think he's been a keeper that everyone respects, and he's delivered. And until Zach Steffen comes down to play with the U.S. men's national team and starts having errors and is not confident, then you make the change. But as of now, Zach Steffen's the number one.
It's a good transition. I'm going to give me like a 65 transition here, because before we get into MLS Predict 6 presented by BetMGM and send you on your way, look, I think he is going to get a game and goal for Man City, because he's going to play in the League Cup in like a week, mm-hmm. right? Like that's the word, right? But if you're an American in Europe right now, we got Christian Pulisic at Chelsea, Weston McKennie at Juventus, Tyler Adams at RB Leipzig, Giovanni Reyna at BVB, Conrad De La Fuente is getting called out by Ronald Koeman saying, hey, this guy's super impressive and getting minutes mm-hmm. preseason for Barcelona. So Gino Dest might be going to Barcelona.
Call him in.
Or he might be going to Bayern Munich to be on the other side from Alphonso Davies. Then you've got Reggie Cannon at Boavista now. Josh Sargent apparently has been killing it with Werder. He's going to be a starter. All 22 are younger. I'm just saying, good times. Good times. Who are you watching this weekend if you had to watch one player over there?
I think Chelsea plays Liverpool.
Yeah, but so does Pulisic's not going to be back probably, right?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know. To me, it's either Adams or it's Reyna. Because Adams played that center back position. You talked about that, Charlie, in our meeting, and mm-hmm. it's a good point to watch what might happen in that three-man back line. But Giovanni Reyna right now, to me, is like catnip. I have to see him play, like every chance. It's going to be a cut match that they're going to win 3-1. He's going to bang one off somebody on a free kick and get a goal. I have to watch Giovanni Reyna. So that's just me right now.
I think for me, it's Conrad De La Fuente, because he's still unknown for me. I haven't seen that much of him. And especially with the first team in Barcelona, it's a transition year. Ronald Koeman comes in, you're playing with Messi. I would like to see kind of more of his game. I know what I've seen from Gio Reyna, I've loved, and he continues to progress. I don't have any questions about Gio Reyna and his mind and his thinking and his touch. I don't have any questions about Tyler Adams and what he can do for the U.S. men's national team and how much the team respects him, right? He's getting nominated to be a captain for the U.S. men's national team, and he's not even in camp. Like, that tells you what players really think of Tyler Adams and how they want to be, led by him and when it comes to World Cup qualifying. And so for Conrad De La Fuente, for me, is still a little bit of an unknown. Obviously, when you're playing at Barcelona, all eyes are going to be on you. So that's one player I really want to see.
So let me fix mine, because it was a mistake. Weston McKennie could play for the first time in a competitive game this weekend in the season premiere for Juventus. That would be a huge moment for American soccer for him to play at that level, especially if he gets a start. Also, Lille is playing against Marseille. So Tim Weah, who's come off the bench the last two games, looked okay in the opener off the bench, could get an appearance in what could be against the French champion.
Yeah, Jonathan David has been starting, and then Weah's come on for him, if I'm right about that. Now, Weston McKennie, this is going to be a quick take, and then we're going to do the Predict 6, and Anders is yelling at me in the comments, and I understand that. You guys talked about Gonzalo Higuain and the service he got at Juventus. To me, Weston McKennie feels like he's a good fit in the situation, and they say they love him right now, and he's playing a ton because he will do all the things that maybe other players won't be expected to do, and he won't have to be like people complain about the passing sometimes or maybe ball control, et cetera, but he won't have to do that. So to me, maybe this is where he takes that huge jump forward because, hey, ball recoveries, win headers, cover a ton of ground, make the right decisions. If you do all that, you'll be in the team or have a great chance to be.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think he's a guy you want to build your attack through or possession through. And that's what he was asked to do at Schalke.
Yeah, for sure.
And it was a mistake. I think of guys, this might be a random one, but like Ji-Sung Park, who was a great attacking player in Holland and was a star for Korea. But when he played for Man U, or Antonio Valencia was the same, they were hard workers. They were guys that you could trust and you could fit everything else around it because you had star players in a team like that. So I agree with you. You've got pieces in front of him in Dybala and Ronaldo. You've got pieces behind him in Betancourt and maybe DeLitt if he's good again at center back. Weston McKennie's job is going to be do all the things none of those guys do to get you on the field. And that's a good spot to start because it's a clear idea of like, what do I need to do to play at this team? Yeah. For Conrad De La Fuente, it's going to be tough. He's got to be elite attacking player and he could play at that level and still not start because of the talent in front of him. But for, I think, McKennie, there's a clear idea of this is what I need to do to get into this team consistently.
Yeah, look, it's going to be exciting to watch these guys throughout the season. Let's do MLS Predict 6 presented by BetMGM and get out of here. Six games, pick the winner, a draw, or like a little side prop as well. Who scores the first goal, et cetera. It's different for every game. Got an opportunity to win big, win some money, win some gear from MLSstore.com. We're going to choose going up and down Columbus, Nashville, Saturday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, ESPN Plus, and DAZN in Canada. What's your pick, Charlie, and why are you picking it?
Columbus. I mean, their spine of the team is so strong from Eli Room to Jossie Zardes. They just have a more of a complete team when you look across the landscape of Major League Soccer. So I'm going to go Columbus Crew, and it's not even really a debate.
Nashville fans not loving it. They always get on us when we don't talk about Nashville. Like, Charlie, you just dismissed us.
They have a lot to prove.
You just missed us out of hand. We just scored four goals. We just won 4-2. We're on the come up. Our defense is very organized.
Mm-hmm. We shall see.
I'm trying to tee you up, David, in case you want to go the other way. You're going to go Nashville.
I'll take it.
Are you going to go?
No, I'll take it. I'll say the attack more confident, purely just based off Dombaji looked happy after he scored a goal and took guys on and had opportunities. I think the other thing is with no Zellerion and maybe no Nagbe for Columbus, it's harder for them to break down that low block because, as Charlie talked about before, Zardes is a guy who wants to run into space. There isn't really that space. Luis Diaz struggles, I think, when the game's a little bit smaller, and then you're starting to rely on Pedro Santos and Derek Etienne, and I think a lot of the pieces there.
Say the two words.
For Columbus, when they break down teams that are in a low block, it's going to come through the quality of Zellerion and Nagbe. Those two guys are unavailable, then Nashville has a chance because they're comfortable defending in that way, and then they can hit Columbus on the counter.
Say the words.
And if Nashville win? If one or two are available?
One or two. There's only two of them, Charlie.
One of the two are available.
If one or two are available, I still take Nashville.
Wow.
Nashville SD for victory in the BetMGM pick. Predict 6.
Exactly. I'm going draw.
It's
all that good. We had a great time with Steve Zach Wine today. Hope you enjoyed. A little longer podcast for you ahead of the weekend. We'll be back on Monday with the normal crew. Enjoy the soccer, everybody. We'll see you soon.